This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, the business station. Good morning and welcome to Enterprise Biz Bytes. My name is Rich Bradbury in the studio with
Jeff Sandu
and
Christine Wong.
So, Tech Thursday, whole bunch of stories lined up within the tech sphere. And of course, we have Tech Maestro with us, Jeff Sandu. He's with us on a Thursday. It's very often that I have to try and keep Jeff quiet sometimes because he does like to talk an awful lot, but we do like
rant.
It.
I rant a lot.
He rants a lot, yes. And of course, Christine is here to keep him in check, right, Christine?
Yes, I am.
So, stories we are going to be talking about today. Detroit and their urgent embrace of self-driving cars. Ooh. We'll be kicking off with that in a second. Shell plans to spend $1 billion a year on clean energy. How the US will be funding advanced brain-computer interfaces.
Oh, this is so cool.
Nice.
China telling carriers to block access to personal VPNs by February. Oh, that Facebook.
Well, we're surprised in China blocking everything, right?
And finally, we will be wrapping up with a smart device that calls cops on a man allegedly beating his girlfriend. Now, Christine.
Yes.
You are going to be talking to us about Detroit and self-driving cars.
Right. So Detroit, a.k.a. basically the birthplace of the American car industry, are really... Okay, so traditional car companies have for a long time been, you know, toying with the idea of self-driving cars, but it's taken to a whole new level of urgency now because on July 7th, Tesla's Model 3, which is the first mid-price mass-market electric vehicle, started rolling out.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the main features of this vehicle is that it has a self-driving system called Autopilot. So it uses cameras, radar, and ultrasonic sensors to get around.
Mm-hmm.
And this is actually proving to be a very interesting quandary for the car industry at the moment because, I mean, autonomous vehicles actually pose a really tangible threat to traditional cars now. For example, last year, General Motors purchased Cruise Automation, which is a self-driving software company, for about $1 billion and invested $500 million in the car service company Lyft.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So it's one of those things where a lot of car companies are suddenly waking up to the fact that, oh, self-driving cars might actually be the future.
Oops.
Even though for the past 2 years, they've already been dabbling here and there. But the moment the Tesla model came out, everyone started to freak out.
Right, because Elon, wasn't he quoted as saying that it's not going to be too long before you can get into your car, fall asleep, and wake up at your place of work?
Yep.
Yeah, but didn't he also say it's not too long where we could actually travel to Mars and live there and all, right?
So slight difference. I mean, come on.
Yeah, where I'm at is that if anyone can make it happen, Elon Musk is the guy, right?
Yeah.
So a lot of car companies have actually... started to go down this road. Nissan has also joined forces with NASA's Ames Research Center to develop terrestrial and space-ready self-driving machines to be commercially available by 2020, which is the same year that Fiat Chrysler, BMW, Honda, Mercedes, and Ford plan to launch their driverless vehicles as well.
Ah. This is all fascinating. This is on the back as well of Toyota also just announcing they're working on a drone car. We spoke about that, I think, fairly recently as well.
Yeah.
Proof of concept, but not much more than that so far.
And just going back to Christine's points of how suddenly there's this urgency, this need, it's so apparent when you even have people like Apple who are hiring car engineers to, you know, figure out a way that they themselves can tap into this market because they are the tech players. These Apples, the Googles, they are tech players who are, you know, self-driving vehicles. It's 90% it's the technology, 10% the car. And car manufacturers, they're stumped because they don't have the technology capabilities like the guys in Apple's and Google's and Elon Musk's brain could actually do, right?
Because they've been so stuck into stick shifts and one thing or another.
For them, it's like, you know, a car is a chassis with four tires around it, but for the tech guys, it's like a car is more than that. It's a car that could speak to you. It could tell you where to go. It could, you know, direct you to a certain route. Car manufacturers never thought about this before because all they want is just have a chassis, four tires into it, there you go.
Yep. And even, this is one of the interesting things that I found out, the Boston Consulting Group actually forecast that by 2035, vehicles with autonomous features will capture 25% of the new car market. So that means, I mean, even now we can see that this is already happening. Google's autonomous cars, now under Waymo, right, have driven more than 3 million miles on public roads in California, Texas, Arizona, and Washington. So basically car companies, right, instead of basically being like subcontractors to the likes of Apple and Google, like you said, Jeff, they're trying to treat the tech companies as suppliers and learn how to build autonomous cars themselves so that the tech you know, giants don't overtake their entire industry.
They're consulting.
Exactly. So they're consulting,
right.
Quote marks.
Right. See, I don't know if it works because, you know, there's so many reports of, you know, well, we know Google, you know, with Waymo, they're doing their own car.
Yeah.
You know, Apple is rumored to, you know, be thinking about it as well.
Oh.
What makes you think that Amazon won't do it as well? Because, you know, they already are doing their, you know, logistics sites. They use transportation to do the logistics business, right? What is stopping them to realize, like, hey, maybe we could go into, you know, things where we could conquer, where Volvo Trucks is doing really well, or the truck industry, for example, right? We know Volvo is doing crazy things with their, you know, autonomous transportations, logistics transportations, like the entire, what, 18-wheeler truck could drive by itself kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
What's stopping Amazon in doing that? You know what, since we actually use a lot of these services to deliver goods, we're going to create our own one. So car manufacturers are scared.
Yeah.
I think there's another point to it as well, and it's a generational thing. This is how I'm looking at it. You look at you know, a city like Detroit, which is built on the backbone of people, petrolheads, you know, loving
massive
to drive,
yeah.
you know, and loving these big V8 engines. Yeah. And there has to be some kind of, you know, pushback, obviously, from the industry there, who are saying, look, you're taking away the beauty of driving from us and giving us all of this tech, which, of course, is the future. But we're just very resistant to this change.
I mean, not to mention as well that even if you do have self-driving cars, to have a human in the car as a backup driver is proven to not be an effective system because we get distracted and we can't just pull out of whatever we're distracted by in order to suddenly start driving.
So
that's actually a very interesting safety concern that's been brought up. But in general, actually, self-driving cars have been proven to be extremely important for road safety purposes because the number of highway deaths has risen to about 40,000 in the US and well over a million worldwide. And 96% of these fatalities are due to driver mistakes. So maybe, who knows, the future will be safer and self-driving.
In the hands of robots.
Yeah.
Yeah. The other thing that car manufacturers also think about is the model, the business model of selling cars as well, right?
Yeah.
We're going to change that because, you know, there are a lot of talks of, you know, you may not even want to own a car in the future because 90% of the time your car spends is in the garage, not doing, right?
Right?
What's my car doing at the moment? What's your car, Christine, doing at the moment? It's all just parked in the basement, not doing anything.
Right.
Yep.
If it could earn me money, go out on its own and, you know, be like its own Uber, that will be great, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, if your car could do that, then I would be, you know, interested in buying a car.
Mm-hmm.
But if I'm, you know, not going to be using my car so often, I would just use these services where I'm, you know, leasing off someone else's private vehicle because it's just an autonomous car.
It's a good idea.
Yeah.
Okay, moving on to a related topic, in fact. The company that supplies these cars with their fuels
this car.
Shell, in fact. They're planning to spend $1 billion a year on clean energy by 2020. This is never a headline that I expected to read. But Royal Dutch Shell plans to spend $1 billion a year. And what they've said, this is a quote from them, from their CEO, Ben Van Beurden. He said, in some parts of the world, we are beginning to see battery electric cars starting to gain consumer acceptance. While wind and solar costs are selling fast, he said in a speech in Istanbul, all of this is good news for the world and must accelerate, while still offering opportunities for producers of fossil fuels. So Shell sees opportunities in hydrogen fuel cells, liquefied natural gas, and next generation biofuels for air travel, shipping, and heavy freights. Areas of transport for which batteries aren't quite as adequate as they should be. And the intermittent nature of wind and solar energy means that power plants fired by natural gas will have a long-term role. Now, there's a real interesting thing what he goes on to discuss is how he talks about there are parts of the world that are not so heavily involved with fossil fuels.
Like,
let's take Southeast Asia, for example. You know, Malaysia, for example. Well, I mean, we do use fossil fuels, but not in the way that Russia does or the US does or the UK does. So what he's saying is for areas like that, there's opportunity to leapfrog the technology and go into clean energy.
Yeah.
You know, we should be looking at stuff like this, right?
Mm-hmm.
Actually, you know, when they invest in things like hydrogen, for example, right, which is something that we know they already have. I think in the US, you have a few places. I think in California, you've got hydrogen pumping stations. And there are, I think, a few cars. I think Honda has one. I think it's the Acura in the US. They have a hydrogen-powered vehicle that you can actually use. And hydrogen is a very clean energy. The only problem with hydrogen is storing them and transferring them from one place to the other. Mm-hmm. That process is extremely dangerous. Anything that goes wrong will just go kaboom.
Oh. So,
there are tiny problems in this alternative clean fuel in that sense. And, you know, it's good to see a company like Shell who have been in the news of, you know, any oil and gas company have always just been taking a hit when it comes to this because they are actually mining Earth's natural resources.
They're seen as the bad guys.
And, you know, they are making money from something that they don't technically own because it's Mother Nature in that sense. So they always seem like the bad guys. Mm. But when you see them putting back this investment into clean energy and hopefully it will come back to us in that sense. Because the research and development to do something like this is a lot of money.
Yeah.
$1 billion to this, it's actually tiny compared to what you could probably make if it works, right?
Drop in the ocean, really.
Yeah, so this is, I guess, it's the first step in them and it's a big move from a company like Shell.
Exactly. When I read that headline, I'm like, oh, thank God.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, that an oil and gas company is actually going, okay, yeah, we realize that perhaps what we're doing is going to be frowned upon in the future. Mm-hmm. Let's start looking. In fact, it's frowned upon now. Let's be honest, you know.
Yeah.
Let's start looking at investing and see what we're going to come up with over the next few years. 2020, I think, is just one of those dates that keeps springing up, isn't it?
Since they made that statement, though, Shell has actually built up an internal team to focus on also solar development as well.
Brilliant.
So, yeah.
Okay.
Good stuff.
Right, it's time for us to take a very short break. We will be back after these messages when Jeff will be telling us all about how the US are funding advanced brain-computer interfaces. Just like that Neo kind of stuff.
Yes.
Nice.
Excellent. Right, if you want to get in touch very quickly, get us on Twitter. We are at BFM Radio. And of course, if you want to get in touch via WhatsApp, it's 018-789-8899. We'll be right back after these messages. BFM 89.9, The Business Station. BFM 89.9, The Business Station. It is Enterprise Biz Bytes. My name is Rich Bradbury.
Elon Musk here.
That's not Elon Musk.
Jeff Sandu here.
We wish. And Christine Wong.
So far, we've spoken about Detroit urgent embrace of self-driving cars and Shell are spending $1 billion a year on clean energy by 2020. Now, those brainiacs in the US are doing something even more futuristic.
Yeah, so, you know, we mentioned Elon Musk's name earlier on and we're talking about cars. And before we go on to that brain story, Elon Musk actually does have... expects us to have a brain machine interface within 4 years. That's Elon Musk's plan in the way, right?
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And it's interesting because just earlier this week, DARPA announced, DARPA is the government agency, the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, which is an agency in the US Department of Defense, and they are responsible for the development of emerging technologies for use by military.
Yeah, I was just going to say, it's basically a black ops arm of technological research for the US military.
Yeah, so DARPA announced on Monday that they have selected 5 grants recipients for the Neural Engineering System Design, or the NESD program, which actually began at the start of the year. So there are 5 selected universities and participants. There's the Brown University, Columbia University, the Seeing and Hearing Foundation, the John B. Pierce Laboratory, Paradomics Inc., and also the University of California in Berkeley. They all will receive multi-million dollar grants to help develop various aspects of the emerging technology. And what exactly is this emerging technology?
Please tell me, I'm excited. Come on.
This is exactly like what you mentioned. It's Neo. It's also Professor X in X-Men as well.
Nice.
They are basically trying to create a Neuralink program that you could talk from one brain to the other. It's basically into the development of the brain. And, you know, when we talk about technology, we've spoken about so many different areas, but the one area where we are still very far ahead, very far behind from achieving its goal, is the brain itself, right? Because we don't understand how the brain works at this point of time,
still,
right?
Yeah.
We just know bits and pieces of it. We know how it sort of talks to each other between from one link to the other, but we're not quite sure how does it actually function, right? Mm-hmm. So the goal of this NESD program is to develop an implantable system able to provide precision communication between the brain and the digital world.
Ooh.
Otherwise known as the ability to control human beings remotely.
Yes. Yeah.
Oh my goodness, you know, that's taking wearable technology to a whole new level.
It effectively would make humans into drones, surely.
Oh,
yes.
Yeah.
And the thing that I don't quite like is what they're trying to call this. It's known as the wetware.
I'm I'm sorry, the what?
The wetware.
No.
As in, not like software, but wetware. Yeah.
There were so many cool names you could have come up with for this.
So these brain-computer interfaces would effectively convert the chemical and electrical systems or signals from the brain into a machine that is, you know, being able to read all this stuff and vice versa.
Oh, I see.
Ultimately, the program operators hope that these neural interfaces will be able to communicate with up to 1 million neurons in parallel. So far, we've only got about 86 billion neural links in our brain. So
Just a few.
So phase one of the program will center around the developing the basic hardware and software needed to actually, you know, create an interface that the brain can sort of work in about a year. They're planning about this. Phase two will refine and miniaturize the technology as well. So here's what the five teams are going to be doing here. The team from Colombia is focusing on the visual cortex and is looking to develop a non-penetrating bioelectric interface. What is that? Basically, it could enable us to see what computers see, or potentially allow computers to see what we see, those kind of things. And you, for example, you could probably just tap into a video feed automatically without even surfing the web. You could just
see it.
You could just actually see it straight away.
Right.
The team from Seeing and Hearing Foundation, they are also focusing on the visual cortex. They are working on a camera-based external artificial retina that could be worn over the eye. This is basically, just think of it, you will have an eye behind of your back of your head now.
Ooh. Okay, right, yeah.
It's quite cool. It's a giant artificial eye that you can plug into the brain sensor. This helps people to gain back sight that they have lost before.
Wow.
Right?
That's the intention of it.
That's the intention of it. The Paradomics team, they're taking it slightly different. They're developing a neuro-style interface that will use an array of penetrating micro-wire electrodes, this is quoting them, to record and stimulate neurons. Eventually, the team wants to develop an implantable device that can help stroke victims to relearn how to speak. It records every single process and step that you've learned from the time you've installed it until the time you recover back. So when you lose any senses, when you restore back those senses, it's exactly what you were before.
A Control Z.
Yeah, something like that. The UK, UC's Berkeley plan is really wild. So they want to build a light field microscope that can modulate as many as million neurons simultaneously. They can actually determine the firing patterns of a specific neurons, which in turn could actually help you to sort of restore vision in blind and also give prosthetic users the sense of touch and feel and warmth. And it's just a prosthetic limb, but they could feel exactly the same thing because that prosthetic limb has a million neurons that sends up to your brain. So it's not just being able to move, it's being able to know how hard are you gripping as well.
Which is an important thing. Yeah.
The Brown University is building what it's called a cortinal intranet. Instead of, just the normal intranet, they're building something that could basically just record and talk from one brain to the other. You wear a mask around your head and I could be talking to you by just talking to you in the brain way.
So this is basically Cerebro, right? From the X-Men.
Yes, exactly.
But this is all fascinating. Is there any kind of timeline for this or? Because the stuff you're talking about seems so incredibly far-fetched, right? I mean, the ability to just wear a skull cap and be able to talk to you across the room or wherever you are is a fascinating idea.
Yeah, so it's a four-year program that they have now. Whether do they, get to that destination or what, it really depends on so many things. They even have to go through the FDA as well, even if they go up to that. So it's a four-year program. They are now doing the research side of things. There won't be any product at the end of the day that they can sell to the consumers in 4 years. It's not an Elon Musk kind of style, right? This is a defense, military, experiment, research, and see if it works. And we may see this in the few years after it has been used in the military side, which generally all kind of technologies that we use came from the military
at some point,
right?
Yeah,
GPS and all that, right?
Yeah.
So we're looking at 4 years to see whether the military and this, black ops agents could, talk to themselves using just brainwaves. And if that works,
It's a great idea to move on to veterans and stuff like that. You know, soldiers that have been injured. If you're spending, if the military are spending this amount of money, you know, to develop something like this, look after the fellows that have looked after you.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, give something back, I guess. Yeah. But
imagine just sending a WhatsApp message just by looking at WhatsApp and then
that's
just
terrifying.
Thinking about it.
No, think about all the groups that would be popping up.
No, there's no longer a brain to mouth filter if you do that though.
It would be so busy, like your brain just keeps buzzing.
Right. Audrey Raj already has no sense. You know, imagine what it would be like if she could do it just by thinking about it. Oh, my word. Right. Time for a short break again. We're going to be coming back with stories about VPNs in China. You are listening to Enterprise Biz Bytes here on BFM 89.9, the business station. BFM 89.9, the business station. You are tuned in to Enterprise Biz Bytes. My name is Rich Bradbury.
Jeff Sandu here.
And
Christine Wong.
So we've had stories about potential super soldiers.
Yeah, definitely. I've got no doubt.
How Shell are moving into clean energy, or potentially spending money on clean energy, and how the US, Detroit, in fact, are embracing self-driving cars. Now we're moving over to China right now. And both of you have been, in fact, all three of us here in the studio have been to China and have had experience there and have tried in vain, in part, to surf the internet. Let's be honest.
The great firewall of China, right? It's not the great wall, it's the great firewall.
Very nice.
I mean, and it sounds like something rather dramatic. And if you are using the internet there, it is very, it's difficult to.
Oh, it's difficult.
You can't surf Facebook or YouTube or Twitter or a whole bunch of stuff. But
there are ways to get around, though.
That's what
because,
I was going to say.
There are ways around, and there's like VPNs and stuff.
Not anymore. Not anymore.
Poor Chinese.
VPNs were something that journalists in particular would be heavily reliant on because it's the way of researching news outside of China and also getting information out of China. Very important, of course.
But it's what the internet is, actually.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
But China's government have told their telecommunication carriers that they want to block individuals' access to VPNs by February the 1st. So they've ordered all state-run telecommunication firms, which include China Mobile, China Unicom, China Telecom, to bar people from using VPNs, which obviously, if you don't know what they are, they're services that kind of skirt censorship restrictions by routing web traffic abroad. So basically, you kind of skip over the wall, as it was. Mm-hmm. And this is something that's always happened since the Great Firewall has gone up. People have found their way around it. I actually remember the day that Facebook was switched off in China. I remember the day that Twitter was switched off in China. I was watching Barack Obama, you know, as he was becoming president on YouTube, right, in China, in Beijing. And then just a few weeks later,
gone.
Wow.
Couldn't access it at all. Yet then when the Olympics came around in 2008, everything was open again. Right. So obviously we know that China are very protective about their image abroad. Which is kind of ironic when you think about it.
I don't think they have the same image as what they used to before.
Right.
So I don't see why they want to place something that is, to me, it's just moving backwards.
Well, the idea is, exactly. The idea is it's suppressing dissent and preserving social stability. That's the idea behind it.
Yeah, but like you mentioned, there will always be a way around it, though.
Of course.
So unless they are just trying to be creative in making people to, you know, develop new technologies to get around the toughest firewall ever, then great. But if you're not doing, if you're not pushing innovation, people will just create something. Or worse still, people will get out of China and move to somewhere where it's a bit more open and where they can go crazy and create solutions that are easier, right?
Yeah, I mean, you also have to look at the fact of the irony that they're trying to preserve social stability, and to be social, you have to communicate and you can't block communication and expect to preserve social stability. It doesn't work like that. That's an oxymoron.
I guess because China is big, it's huge, right? In the sense, right? So China, if you have a business in China and you serve maybe just 10% of the population there, that's business done. For you, right? Basically, that's it. But you have to allow foreign sort of technology or just foreign kind of creativity to come in and tap into it and share those information. The internet is supposed to be a sharing platform. It's not supposed to be a library where only I can enter if I have an access card. Yeah. Gone are the days. You can't do, you know, those kind of old ways of protecting something in the digital world. Mm-hmm. The digital world is a very different kind of world. They need to understand this.
Jeff, I absolutely sit on your side of the fence on this. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Without any shadow of a doubt. However, this is China we're talking about, right? When they say this is going to happen, it will happen. You know, they will come down, and the majority of people who live there, you know, despite what we think and how they have, everybody has access to internet, they don't. There's a huge portion of the country that has no internet access and really doesn't care that, you know, these VPNs are being taken away. Mm. It's people like you and me and people like multinational companies who are there and rely on communication via VPN for their business abroad.
Yeah. It's not just us. Like, you know, it's fine if, you know, I'm not allowed to access YouTube or Google because they have equivalent platforms you know, probably do better because I'm, you know, it's localized in that sense. Mm-hmm. But think about the large corporations that you mentioned, Rich. Like, you know, those are the guys who will rely on VPN services to get information of the outside world, outside behind that firewall, what's behind that firewall and how I can use this. They're the ones who will be affected, and they're the ones who are going to take the hit. And when they get the hit, it's, you know, their employees will be affected, and it's a trickle-down effect.
Right. Mm.
So there surely is a different way to protect China. I don't know what they're trying to protect, but, you know, there's surely a different way to protect China's, you know, internet world other than just blocking VPN.
Right, because otherwise you're going to get, you know, the kind of the echo effect, you know?
Yeah.
If you're in a world, an internet world, where all you're ever seeing is local content and you have no access to anything outside. Mm. But social stability is a huge problem that the Chinese want to think is there. Mm. This is the issue, right? They know that if a mini little riot starts off in Beijing and somebody somewhere else finds out about it, you know, that is going to spread like wildfire.
Yeah.
And I can tell you, you know, a hand on heart kind of example, when there was a earthquake in China in 2007, the only people that knew about it were people outside of China and those that were affected directly by it. Nobody in the bigger cities knew about it at all. Thousands of people were killed because the government wanted to suppress the information going out. Mm. And it was only because of Twitter that people found out about it in the country. You know, Twitter is now banned, as we know, in China. But this is it's vital that information can cross borders without there being any kind of restrictions. Jeff, you're absolutely right.
Yeah.
I mean, I've said it once, I'll say it again. The world just seems to be going closer and closer to 1984, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So
okay.
It's not sure yet whether this will be a permanent thing. So there is still a glimmer of hope. Okay, all right.
Like you say, like you say, there are ways and means around it. I'm sure it will only be a matter of days before somebody posts a way to get over the Great Firewall of China.
Yeah.
Or dig underneath it.
Yeah.
Mm. Right, time for another short break. If you want to get in touch, 018-789-8899 on WhatsApp. And if you want to get on the tweet, it is at BFM Radio. More music coming right up. But when we come back, technology could well be spying on you and reporting you if you do something naughty. Right back. BFM 89.9, The Business Station. Welcome back to Enterprise Biz Bytes. My name is Rich Bradbury.
I'm Jeff Sandu.
And I'm Christine Wong.
So we've had a dystopian future so far on the show.
Honestly, it seriously sounds like it's been ripped straight out of the pages of a comic book.
Yep. If you are only just joining the show and you missed any part of it, remember you can head over to the website, bfm.my, download the podcast. If you can't do that, download the app. It is in the Apple App Store and, of course, Google Play, and we are now CarPlay enabled if your car is also.
Mm. And probably in the future when we have devices like Google Home and Alexa, you know, you might be able just to say like, hey Alexa, could you just play me that podcast that I just heard Richard Bradbury was talking about? And bang, it would play it off.
And it will play it off. That's a scary thought.
It is a scary thought.
It's actually happening.
And it is actually happening because according to a recent report by ABC News, police officers were actually called to a home outside New Mexico earlier this week when a smart device phoned 911. And the operator heard a confrontation in the background. Mm. And the police said that this gentleman by the name of Eduardo Barros, he was house-sitting at the residence with his girlfriend and their daughter. And Barros apparently pulled the gun on his girlfriend when they got into an argument. And he asked her, did you call the sheriffs? A smart device in the home apparently heard it as, call the sheriffs.
Ooh.
And
wow.
Proceeded to call the sheriffs. And the police came.
Oh.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Could you imagine?
I mean, Wow.
When I heard this story, it was the same reaction. I'm like, what?
Wait. So it didn't just overhear him and dial.
It made a decision.
I don't know how I feel about it.
So how does that work, though? Because surely with these kinds of systems, you have to, I don't know, say, like, for example, with Siri, you have to say, Siri, tell me something.
Yeah, so what happened was that the smart device, initially some reports were saying it was Google Home, some reports are saying it's Alexa.
Right, I read it as Alexa the first time.
Either one of those have the same kind of features, right? Yeah, they listen to you all the time to wait for that cue when you mention them, right?
Yeah. Yep.
I don't know how this happened in a sense, like, it kind of happened without an instruction. But I'm guessing it's because it's an emergency keyword, probably. Mm. Police, cops, sheriffs.
Right.
I guess those are keywords where you don't need to have a command to activate it.
So, like, safety words.
It's a safety word, right? So if I just say police, it will know that I'm in danger or in some ways, right? Mm. It's a smart device. So it heard, instead of hearing, did you call the sheriffs, it heard as call the sheriff. So it just missed out the did you because it was probably not listening at that point of time, but it snapped when it heard sheriffs, and the device probably could rewind back to maybe a few seconds and trying to make up what you're trying to say and call the sheriffs, and you're like, right, I'm going to call the sheriffs. 911 was called, and you know what? A SWAT team arrived at home.
Oh my word.
Mm. And they negotiated for hours, and they actually took Barros into custody, and the police told ABC News that the man's girlfriend was not injured. She was slightly injured but didn't have to go to the hospital, and the daughter is safe and unharmed, and they were just having a house domestic problem there.
Until he pulled the gun out on her.
Until he pulled the gun out on her, you know, and the device decided to, like, hey, I'm going to step in. Well, no, it didn't quite step in. It just kind of like, you know, I'm going to call the SWAT team.
It called in.
This raises so many questions, though, right?
Yeah, it's continuously listening to us. There are good sides and there are bad sides. I like the fact that it has safety words that you could trigger and it could make decisions without you even, you know, forcing. If you are in a great danger, you don't have much time and like, you know, Alexa, could you call 911? Or like Google Home, call 911. Like, you don't probably have time to do it.
Yeah.
But if, you know, there are certain words that you could program in your own way instead of just common words like sheriff and police, like, it may get some people into a lot of trouble. That's just the one side of things. I know we have a whole bunch of areas, like, what else is it listening to us?
Yeah. Right? Mm. And I mean, this is the other thing as well about potentially programming kind of like secret, like, commands or words into, like, there's a very famous kind of story that always circles around the web where someone called 911 pretending that it was a call to a pizza delivery
thing, yes.
But it was actually a case of domestic violence, and then they picked up on it and stuff. So if you could do that and you could make this a subtle, you know, way of calling the authorities, I mean, on the one hand, it's great because clearly, you know, you get the help that you need in time and such like, but then also, again, the idea of this constant surveillance is terrifying. So it's just one of those things where it just feels like great intentions. Don't know about the execution.
Previously, there was a case with the Amazon Echo device listening.
The dollhouse story.
Yeah, and, you know, there was like a murder a scenario, and, you know, there was an Amazon Echo within the area of the listening area, and police actually did tap into the device to see what it has heard and then made the police investigation based on it. We're not quite sure what exactly did Alexa heard in that case, but, you know, it is becoming tools that could be very useful for police cases, which kind of leads us to that question, like, are these devices surveillance devices, or are these devices we're buying them because it's the ease of doing things? Not quite sure the surveillance side of things. Device alone aside, our smartphones, and I know every one of us here in this room, because we've talked about this, where, you know, we kind of talk among each other about this device and we're just talking and our phones are on the table. And the next time you visit Facebook or Google or you open your email,
even Instagram,
of an Instagram, you see something that what you were mentioning verbally to your friend with your phone locked, even though it's on the table. And then you go like, hang on a minute. How does it know that I was talking to Richard about this particular product? Because I now suddenly just see it on my thing. Mm-hmm. So even your smartphones are listening to you. Marketers are using it to, you know, make money. We need to find that balance to make sure that we are not getting, you know, ripped off of our digital identity and, you know, being manipulated by marketers and advertisers. But we do get the convenience of things like this. If it's a house abuse that's going on, it's obviously, you know, it's going to be very difficult for the girlfriend here to, you know, pick up the phone and call 911 and explain what's going on while the boyfriend is, you know, pointing a gun at her.
And that's the issue, right? We were talking briefly off air, weren't we, about the Cold War, for example.
Yeah.
You know, we had listening devices. People would have them in their house and you'd pay people to come and make sure they weren't there.
Mm-hmm.
These are things that we are actively taking into our house, you know, and often telling people how excited we are about having one of these devices in our house. You know, oh, it's going to order, you know, food for me. It's going to make my online shopping much more, you know, much easier. All of these things, great steps forward.
Yeah.
You know, calling the police, for example, and making a decision as to whether or not somebody is in trouble. All great things. But like you say, at what cost?
Yeah.
Is it just our digital identity? Is it, you're feeding it credit card information. You're feeding it all kinds of information. Where does that data go? Who owns it? After we've said, okay, I will allow this thing in my house.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know? It really feels like convenience comes with a price, and that price is your privacy.
Yeah.
Right? Like, with all this stuff that you're giving it. And, you know, again, like, great intentions, but then what happens after that? How much do you give? Like, where does the boundary lie between what you choose to give and what is taken from you?
I feel like that's a Spider-Man quote coming up.
Do it, Jeff.
With great power comes great responsibility.
Amazing.
Which, by the way, is not a Spider-Man quote. It's Uncle Ben.
It's Uncle Ben, yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not Spider-Man, by the way.
To quote you back, Spock, the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few.
Right. It's a nerd off.
It's a nerd off indeed. On that note, what an interesting show we've had today. We've got to wrap up, ladies and gents. We started off with
Detroit's urgent embrace of self-driving cars.
And how Shell intend to spend $1 billion a year on clean energy.
And DARPA, which is the Defense Advanced Research Project Agency, is going to be spending millions to fund advanced brain-computer interfaces.
And China telling carriers, no, you cannot have your VPNs anymore.
All right. And also we talked about a smart device which called cops on a man allegedly beating his girlfriend. And the whole discussion of, like, why are we allowing surveillance devices into our hands?
Indeed, indeed. Right. Before we go, though, coming up after the 1 o'clock news, it is the Breakfast Grill replay. It will be the managing director of the Malaysian retail group, that is Tan Hai Xin. He's the retail sector could be seeing its toughest challenge yet in a time when e-commerce is in bloom, weak growth and shifting trends beset retailers. But the Malaysian Retail Group are optimistic about the sector. Join Managing Director Tan Hai Xin after the break. All that coming up very shortly. On behalf of Jeff Sandu, Christian Wong, and myself, Richard Bradbury, it has been Enterprise Biz Bites. We will be back tomorrow from deepest, darkest, Banda Atama, BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.